All right, welcome. This is a very special episode of Brighttown Broadcast News for Monday, July 24th, 2023. Mike Adams here. Thank you for joining me today. And what makes this so special? Well, a couple of things. The big story is about the global food situation, as India has just banned rice exports. And this is causing kind of a global panic in terms of rice. And we also have the wheat situation because of what's happening in Ukraine with the port of Odessa and so on. We're going to talk about all of that. But I'm also going to bring you something that I think is very inspiring today. And it's a very somewhat difficult story to share with you. It's very personal. And just to say it bluntly, I'm going to share with you today the details, the photos, everything, including the blood, all of it. I suffered a severe injury a couple of months ago, almost became an amputee of one of my fingers. And it was, almost lost my finger. Severe laceration, cut right through the lateral ligaments of my finger, cut right through the blood supply, cut right through the nerves. Amazingly, the bone was okay. Although I'm sure it was fractured, and I probably partial laceration of the primary ligament for the finger. So I suffered a very, very severe injury, and it's been just a little over 2 months, and it's almost fully healed, which is basically miraculous. I'm going to show you the photos, and I have a whole segment on that for you. The first few photos are bloody, just to warn you. And then the photos at the end, you're just going to think, it's impossible. Especially if you have a medical, if you're a doctor or something watching this. You're going to think somehow that these photos were faked. I assure you they're not. And the reason this is good news is because it should be, I think, very inspiring. I'm going to share with you exactly what I did to overcome a truly crippling injury that could have turn me into, dare I say, a cripple. I wouldn't use that term for others, but you know, some people might use that term to describe someone who loses the functioning of their index finger. They might be called a cripple. And I did not become a cripple. And I'm going to share with you exactly what I did, what worked, and the journey back from that extreme injury, and also how it gave me a sense of enhanced compassion for people who suffer disabilities, because I was for some time disabled, which I will describe in that special section coming up. But it has a very positive ending, a very inspiring message, and that's why I chose to share it with you at this point. The other thing I want to mention, I'm drinking right now as I'm recording this, I'm drinking pine needle tea. And so I went out over the weekend and I harvested pine needles from the loblolly pine trees that grow all over central Texas. And as you may know, loblolly pine trees the pine needles contain not only very high vitamin C, but also shikimic acid. Shikimic acid, some of you already know this, shikimic acid is the miracle molecule that stops pandemics. It's actually the primary ingredient that's used in the drug made by Roche called Tamiflu. Tamiflu is an anti-influenza drug. It's an antiretroviral drug. It stops virus replication in the body. And it's, of course, FDA approved for that purpose. The ingredient in Tamiflu is shikimic acid. And it's very easy to get shikimic acid. I just go out and harvest pine needles, and then I just throw them in a pot of boiling water. It's that simple. Or you can use an ultrasonic extractor that I have, too. And you just, like, throw it in there and then turn on the ultrasound for 20 minutes or whatever. And then when it's done, you have pine needle tea. And so I really enjoy the taste of pine needle tea. It's incredibly refreshing. It's also very healing. And as I said, it's loaded with vitamin C and also shikimic acid. And what's amazing about pine needle tea is that here we are, we live in a world where we are taught to be blind to the medicine that's all around us. And so we can drive around and we can pass, you know, pine trees all along the sides of the roads, all, you know, all over the country, in places like Oregon and Texas and wherever, lots of pine trees. And most of them have shikimic acid in them, as I understand it. I've already tested in my lab the loblolly pines, known as the lost pines in central Texas, and they're loaded with it. In fact, when we ran that through our mass spec system, it actually kind of contaminated the interface with so much shikimic acid, it took us a few days to clean it out because it was such an overload. I mean, it's just loaded with shikimic acid. So I know to go out and harvest this, you know, make my own healing medicine, but yet most people drive by this stuff in the middle of a pandemic, you know, begging for the vaccine to come out. I mean, think about the stupidity of what our race and our nation has become. Maybe not the whole race, but certainly our nation rooted in Western medicine. And think about the wisdom of the Native American Indians, because the Native American Indians, they would drink pine needle tea all the time. That was one of their sources of vitamin C. And if they had sickness, they knew how to use the local plants and medicines in order to get healthy again, because they were drinking shikimic acid, right? So the Native Americans, and I'm part Native American, Native Americans were using the medicine all around them. They weren't blind to the medicine. They could see it. So they used it, and they drank it. They consumed it. Whereas here we are in Western society, and we all brag about being all technologically advanced, you know, and it's like we're rooted in the science, and the science has the consensus and all this nonsense, and it's the pharmaceuticals and FDA, it's just nonsense. And all this technology and all these patents and all this pharmaceutical research, and these idiots who work for Big Pharma will drive right past the pine trees and they will ask themselves, when is the vaccine coming out so that we can have medicine? You dumbass, you drove right by it on your way to work. You know, isn't it crazy? People drive right by medicine every day. I used to talk about this when I lived in Arizona. You go out in the desert. I used to jog in the desert with my dog, and we would jog and go through all these wild desert areas and all these plants. And it's like, man, there's a bunch of anti-cancer plants out here. So many anti-cancer plants and anti-diabetes plants and so on. And it was just amazing that the desert was so medicinal if you knew what you were looking for. If you could look beyond the spikes and the spines on the cacti, then you could see the medicine. And the same thing is true everywhere. Wild foods, wild medicine, herbs, even pine trees. People look at pine trees like, that's useless. No. How about anti-plague medicine? Right there. So I just want to share that with you. The solutions are right in front of us. It's just that most people can't see them because they're brainwashed. They're brainwashed by Big Pharma's propaganda, which is catapulted by mainstream media into a series of spells and sorcery. And my job is to be the spell breaker. And in fact, I recorded a separate podcast on that very point, and I may include it in today's podcast, where I'm talking about the sorcery, the brainwashing. In fact, yeah, I do want to include that, because my job is to be the spell breaker, to cast away the darkness so that you can open your eyes and actually see the real world around you, which includes shikimic acid in pine tree needles, by the way. So I'll play that podcast for you here in a little bit. At least that's the current plan. But it's just amazing. You know, I don't know what to say. Most of the people you know are blind. And I don't mean visually. I mean cognitively blind. They can't see the world for what it is. And it takes a dedication to seeing reality in order to see it. And I don't claim to be able to see everything. There are other experts in wild foods and wild medicine that have far more knowledge than do I, and I admire them. I'd like to learn from them. But man, the average person out there, they don't see the world at all. They live in a delusional fantasy land of lies and propaganda and psychological operations pushed upon them by the media, the government, and the corporations. COVID was a giant psyop. Okay, on another front, I also want to mention that the newest episode of Decentralized TV should be published sometime today. In fact, I'm confident it will be. So you can look for that on decentralized.tv, or you can find it on my channel on brighteon.com. We're also posting it on BitChute and Rumble and a few other places. Now, this interview is with Alex Romanov with the Beam Project. And if you want to learn about Beam, it's a privacy coin that uses the Mimblewimble blockchain, which is this really interesting, elegant blockchain. I'm not going to go into all the details here. But he combines it with this Lelantis offline transaction capability that resembles more of, let's say, Monero or Firo. So this coin, Beam, actually can work both with online Mimblewimble and offline Lelantis type of transactions, giving it some really special properties. You can read about Beam at the website beam.mw. That's beam.mw. And you can hear the entire interview, of course, the full show at decentralized.tv. So this is a really cool project. And again, it's a privacy coin. Very few people know about it. So it's one of those kind of undiscovered or hidden gems. I actually posted a podcast about this over the weekend, and then just in anticipation of the full interview, which, again, should be live today. We have another interview with a totally different project coming up this week. And I think we're posting the Low Energy Nuclear Reactions interview. So, that should be really interesting stuff. Look for that. Now let's talk about the worsening of the global food crisis, because India just banned rice exports. And this is covered by Reuters, by the way. India imposes major rice export ban, triggering inflation fears. Yeah, well, they said it. The summary of the story is that India accounts for 40% of global rice exports. And this is expected to impact about half of all the rice exports out of India, because there are some forms of rice like basmati that apparently are not affected by this. But the non-basmati rice, the white rice, which is what's mostly exported around the world, is banned now. I mean, the exports are banned. So from that story, India on Thursday ordered a halt to its largest rice export category in a move that will have shipments by the world's largest exporter of the grain triggering fears of further inflation on global food markets. Again, this is Reuters. The government said that it was imposing this ban after retail rice prices climbed 3% in one month after late heavy monsoon rains caused damage to crops. Okay, so right away, understand what's going on here. India is saying, we need to feed our own people with affordable food. Therefore, we can't export rice to anybody else. Nobody else is going to have affordable rice. Now, India, as it said, is about 40% of the rice exports of the world. And a lot of countries in the Middle East, for example, really depend on India for affordable rice. Of course, a lot of exports go to Europe as well, and some to Southeast Asia and so on. But other countries produce rice as well, even the United States. But this ban on exports is going to cause rice inflation, which is really not the right term for it, but it's going to look like price inflation. Prices will go up in the marketplace everywhere around the world because of this. So notice what caused the damage to the crops, the heavy monsoon rains. Geoengineering, right? So we have droughts in North America that are damaging wheat crops and corn crops and alfalfa and soybeans and everything else, while massive floods are taking place in India and certain other areas of the world and causing crop damage. Again, as Dane Wigington explains from Geoengineering Watch, this is because through ionization, there are mechanisms that can control and actually push moisture where they want it to go, and they can deprive areas of the world of the moisture that they don't want. In other words, weather systems can be steered. They can be controlled. It's not that they can create rain, but they can push it to where they want it, or they can push it out of an area where they're trying to cause a drought. So all they have to do is push all the rain into one area, cause heavy flooding, and then deny rain to other areas to cause heavy droughts and crop failures. So now we're looking at global crop failures that are only going to get far, far worse. This is a major deal that India is banning its exports. It's going to put heavy price pressure on other areas, and there are people right now kind of panic buying rice. I've seen some videos over the weekend, people in other countries, even Japan, for example, panic buying rice at the grocery store. You know, Asian countries consume a lot of rice. So even in Taiwan and parts of China and Korea and so on, people are right now stocking up on rice. Now, the good news is that rice is grown in other countries, and in the United States, even though rice will be more expensive, if you have, I don't know, if you have some income, you can probably afford to eat. But the bad news is a lot of people are only marginally able to feed themselves. And this is true in the United States, where homelessness is a worsening problem. But it's also true, especially true, in African nations, where people are barely surviving on very low daily wages of sometimes like a dollar a day or something like that in certain countries, or sometimes a couple dollars a day. And some increase in food prices of rice can be devastating to certain families and many of the people in many countries in Africa. And it's also true in certain areas of, you know, Central and South America, but more so in Africa, where sensitivity to food prices is very high and many people are just barely getting by. So once again, the globalists have managed to cause another crisis. This is the engineered global food crisis, and it's only going to get worse. And here's why. And now this involves wheat and Ukraine. So what's happening in Odessa and with the safe passage agreement that Russia is no longer honoring, this agreement had the West saying, okay, you got to let these grain ships dock at the Odessa port in order to export grain out of Ukraine so that we can have, you know, affordable grain for Europe and the Middle East and the rest of the world. And this agreement was supposed to have the West reconnecting Russia's agricultural banks to the SWIFT system so that Russian banks could accept payment for the grain exports that they were involved in. And so this was supposed to be a win-win deal where Russia was saying, okay, we're not going to attack these ships leaving the port. And then the West was supposed to say, okay, we'll reactivate some Russian banks so that you can engage in trade of food. Well, it was all just a made-up story by the US and NATO. It turns out that the ships were actually being sent to Odessa filled with weapons to offload weapons for the Ukraine war. And then they were leaving with grain, but they were being used to, you know, deposit NATO weapon systems. And by the way, the Russian agricultural banks were never allowed, they were never reinstated in the SWIFT system. So of course the US and NATO lied, as they always do. They never keep their side of any deal. And they lied on purpose to try to get Russia to back out of the deal, which Russia just did a week ago or so. After, by the way, after there was an underwater drone attack on this bridge in Crimea that connects Crimea to the Russian mainland. And that drone, by the way, was almost certainly launched from one of the ships that was navigating there in the Black Sea under the protection of this agreement. So Russia said, look, if you're going to just weaponize this whole grain export deal, then we're not going to honor that deal anymore. And so Russia backed out of it. So as a result, of course, the Western media all over the world says Russia's going to starve everybody to death because Russia won't let grain export out of Odessa. Of course, it's a lie. The real engineers of starvation are the globalists with their geoengineering systems. And when it comes to the situation in Odessa and Ukraine, you know, if the West really wanted to honor the deal, they wouldn't have been using those ships to import weapons. They would have just focused on food. If it's just about food, then let's let food flow. But, you know, of course, the West is incapable of honoring any deal at all. And they have to put out a bunch of propaganda about, you know, everything is Russia's fault. So nevertheless, even if you don't buy all that, even if you think that NATO did keep their word, which they never do, but even if you think they did, the upshot is that wheat is about to get a lot more scarce, either way you look at it, because there's less wheat being exported out of Odessa. And by the way, then Russia actually attacked the Odessa port with several missile strikes and made it a lot more difficult for anybody to use the port of Odessa at the moment. So I'm not even sure what kind of activity is possible there at the moment. I guess we'll find out. So nevertheless, wheat is going to become more scarce, and then because of India, rice is going to become more scarce, and then because of the droughts in North America, corn and soybeans, and also to some extent wheat and other crops, are also going to become more scarce. Are you noticing a pattern here? It's an attack on the global food supply. And it's through sometimes economic warfare. Sometimes it's through shutting down fertilizer, which is another thing, you know, that the West did by blowing up the Nord Stream pipeline and shutting off the natural gas that's used to make fertilizer for all of Europe, right? And have you noticed that one of the reasons India needs to protect its own population from food inflation is because global price inflation of necessary goods and energy is going higher and higher. In other words, people in India, you know, there's 4 billion people in India. It's the world's most populous country, right? More Indian people than Chinese. And did you know that most of those people live in poverty? Yeah. And did you know that when energy prices go up, that a lot of families in India have to choose between, you know, energy and food? And so when energy prices go up, it puts more pressure on families to be able to afford food. You know, it forces them to have to make more extreme choices about what they can afford to eat. And also, if you think about it, consumer goods going up in price also adds to this conundrum. So the fact that we have financial policies that are based on global debt creation and money printing and central bank, you know, shenanigans, low interest rates, artificially low, and, you know, counterfeiting currency, this is leading to families in India and other countries being less and less able to afford food, which is leading to these countries to engage in food protectionism. Food protectionism, okay? Now, understand the importance of this term, because it means as more countries choose food protectionism, it means they're going to do exactly what India did. They'll ban exports in order to help their local people be able to afford more food. But in doing so, they are causing, of course, increased food scarcity for everyone else. And because of that food scarcity, as it spreads from country to country, other countries that have similar problems with crop failures or inflation or rising energy prices, they will tend to engage in food protectionism as well. And they can start to ban exports of whatever they produce. And as this spreads from country to country, because we are moving into an era of increased inflation and crazy money printing and destruction of energy infrastructure and increased war activities, obviously, as this gets worse and worse, international trade of food is hit hard to the point where everybody loses. Everybody ends up with a less diverse supply chain of food and with more scarcity of food. And everybody loses out on the advantage of the seasonality of different countries, you know, where different countries, because of where they are on the planet, they can produce food at different times of the year. And that's how they keep all the shelves stocked at the grocery store, you know, because it's coming from South America, let's say. But if there's more food protectionism, then that means that all the out-of-season foods are less and less likely to appear at your local grocery store. Imagine that. Imagine if the American food consumer had to eat within the season. Like, in the fall, you're eating squash. Because that's what grows. You know, I mean, I know the average American has no clue what even grows at different seasons, right? So they're completely disconnected from the food supply. They have no idea that you're not normally supposed to be able to get like fresh lemons in January, let's say. That stuff comes from, south of the equator, folks, or close to the equator. So the seasonality redundancy vanishes. And then as a result, the shelves start to look more and more empty, which freaks people out and so on. It's a vicious self-reinforcing cycle. And we've entered this cycle in a big way with, of course, India banning exports of rice. Now, look, I will put a little plug in here for our store, healthrangerstore.com. We've got Ranger buckets still in stock. And thank goodness that we ordered a massive amount of raw materials and we pre-built many thousands of these Ranger bucket sets. And we've seen an increase in sales over the last few days, probably because of this kind of news, the wheat situation in Ukraine. And we're able to keep up, which is unusual. So right now, if you want to get some certified organic lab-tested long-term storable food, and you can see all the ingredients list at the store website, just go to healthrangerstore.com and search for Ranger buckets. We also have mini buckets and mega buckets with all kinds of different food materials. They're all heavily vacuum sealed in long-term storable bags. I call them bricks because they're formed into the shape of kind of like bricks. They're very stiff because of all the air is sucked out of them, like commercial vacuum sealed. And then it's inside the polyethylene bucket, which is very much rodent resistant, almost rodent proof, but not quite. Remember, if raccoons come in and use power tools, they can get into the buckets. But other than that, they're rodent proof or rodent resistant. So check all that out, healthrangerstore.com. It's not a bad idea to have extra food right now, given that it's clear that global food inflation and scarcity are both going to get significantly worse. The news is breaking right now. Even Reuters is covering it. So rice products are going to go up. Everything made from rice, gluten-free stuff, right? Almost all the gluten-free foods are made with rice. Well, they're going to get a lot more expensive. And all the instant meals that use rice, your dinners, your frozen whatever, it's going to go up in price as well. So this continues to track with a lot of the predictions here, where food prices can go up between 50 and 100% in 1 year in some cases, not all cases, but in many cases. And with meat prices skyrocketing across Europe because of the shutdown of farms and the mass slaughter of cows and what Netherlands is doing to seize farms, meat prices are skyrocketing. So food inflation is accelerating across many different sectors or categories of food. And this is something that you very much need to be aware of and plan for. And, the way this is going to work is, like, people who have money, which frankly includes, I think, most of the listeners here, you have a decent amount of money. You're not going to starve to death from a lack of an ability to buy food, but it will just eat into more and more of your disposable income. But for many people who don't earn excess income, let's say, this can start to be very devastating. Food can start to take up a higher and higher percentage of their monthly income. In some cases, maybe exceeding a home mortgage or what they pay in rent. And then for low-income people, who are probably not listening to this, but for really low-income people, this can be so devastating that it makes them homeless, where they can't pay rent or they can't pay gas. They just to eat takes every dollar that they could get their hands on, even with government assistance. Now, food stamps do not keep up with food inflation. There's another truth that is not talked about that much because the government can't admit to the real inflation that's happening. So even people on food stamps are less and less able to afford to eat. And I know you might think, well, gosh, America is so overweight and so on. Maybe they could get by and eat less. Okay, well, I'm not going to make that argument. I'm just saying, Americans do have health issues related to food, but that's more a function of the fact that the food is so heavily nutrient depleted and heavily processed. Like, it's crap food. It's more that than the excess calories. I mean, I'm convinced that if people ate the same number of calories, but it was more nutritious, had more minerals, had more nutrients, then pretty soon they really would automatically eat less because they wouldn't be craving all the missing minerals all the time. You know, you start to get the food that your body craves, and then your body naturally kind of tapers off. The hunger wanes more. But I don't, that's a whole separate podcast. You know, it's like one of the reasons that people have all these cravings is because they're nutrient deficient. And if you feed your body, then, you know, some of those cravings can go away. Anyway, the point is, higher food prices are not likely to make you poor listening to this, but it will make the poor homeless. And that's an issue for everybody. That's a society-wide issue. As more and more people lose their homes and they become desperate, and then they turn to crime and violence and carjackings and whatever, and guess what? Now we all have a problem, especially in those Democrat cities where they don't lock people up anymore. It's like a no-bail policy everywhere. It's just, oh yeah, they arrest somebody for attempted murder and then they just let them go. Back on the streets. Oh, carjacking? Oh, you're back on the streets. There was a story about a guy that did like 3 carjackings in one day and got caught 3 times. They just kept releasing him back onto the streets. It's crazy. So yeah, desperate people become a problem for everybody in society. And then on top of that, all the money printing is making everybody's dollars less and less valuable for anything, not just food, but housing and, you know, clothing and everything else that people buy. So we're in a real conundrum here, folks, globally. And the future of Western civilization is not looking very good. Things are crumbling fast. Not enough food for people. You know, the UN says there's 2.4 billion people in the world right now who can't feed themselves, and that's before India banned the rice exports. 2.4 billion people. That's like, it's approaching 30% of the whole world. And believe me, with this rice export ban, that number is going to be even larger. So we're talking, you know, easily probably 3 billion people coming up are going to be missing meals. Not necessarily just starving to death, but at least not having access to a sufficient quantity of food that they would otherwise normally need. So yeah, food desperation is going to get a lot worse. Now, at the same time, don't forget the money printing is not going to stop. So that situation won't be reversed. Money's not going to become more valuable, or currency, I should say. Not going to magically become more valuable. Food prices are not going to go down anytime soon. I don't see that happening for years. This is a good time to grow more food. I know I've said it so many times, maybe it's getting old, but grow more food. Buy local. Visit your local farmers markets. Visit your local CSAs, community-supported agriculture. Food co-ops, whatever. Buy local, grow local, trade, barter. Get yourself some seeds, you know, arkseedkits.com, A-R-K, arkseedkits.com. Learn how to grow food from Marjorie's website, icangrowfood.com. Go check out her videos. Let's see, what else? What else is good for growing food? Oh, yeah, Patriot Green Products. They've got the amazing compost and the biochar products and so on. Amazing stuff. PatriotGreenProducts.com, I think, is the website. We've had him on as a guest. We'll have him back on again. Get into growing food. It's going to become more and more critical for your survival. All right. With that said, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to do 2 special reports for you here. The first one is the personal injury healing journey story. I'll have that right here, and that's where I've experienced this miraculous recovery, this healing recovery, after almost having my finger amputated or severed, you know, completely gone. I'm lucky to have it, and the healing has been a miracle. And I have the photos to show you. I'm going to give you that story here next, and then after that, my podcast about how my job, my role here is to be a spell breaker, to break the spells under which the establishment tries to put us. I mean, they're sorcerers, and they're messing with our minds and casting illusions all the time. And so I am a spell breaker, and you are probably a spell breaker. You can disperse illusions. You can see things clearly for what they are, otherwise you wouldn't be listening to this podcast. So both of these special reports I think you'll find very interesting. I just want to warn you that the first one here with my finger injury, if you're squeamish about seeing blood, I warn you when I'm about to show the bloody photo, but just look away if that's going to bother you. But it does have a very positive outcome, so I still have my finger. and it healed in a way that no doctor would think is possible. You'll see. It's crazy. Okay. Well, enjoy these two special reports, and I'll be back with you tomorrow. Take care. I'm going to share some fairly bloody pictures with you of what happened to me. I almost became an amputee a couple months ago. And I'll warn you before I show the photo, but this has a positive ending about healing. And I decided to share this with you now because, well, I'm almost fully recovered. And it's a miracle. I would say it's a miracle of God and of prayer, and it's also a miracle of nutrition and medicinal mushrooms. Now, let me mention Jamie Foxx up front here first, because I've been critical of Jamie Foxx not sharing the truth about his stroke with the public. And even at the same time that I have a lot of compassion for Jamie Foxx, and frankly, anyone who's been severely injured or who has undergone a stroke. But Jamie Foxx and his family have gone to great lengths to cover up the nature of his injury. But you'll notice in that boat video of him a couple weeks ago, he was seated, he wasn't walking, and he was only using his left arm. He was waving with his left arm. And I said at the time, you know, this is consistent with someone who's had a stroke injury and is perhaps disabled, at least partially, on the right side of their body. Well, then Jamie Foxx put out another video a couple of days ago, well, over the weekend, I guess, where he's talking to the audience in a heartfelt, tearful message. And I get it. I understand it. He says his eyes are working fine, and he can obviously speak at this point, which is amazing. But he says people said he was paralyzed, and he's not paralyzed, and he points to his right side, I think almost unconsciously. And his right side, his right hand and his right arm, he never moves them during this video. And I feel sorry and sad that clearly Jamie Foxx has suffered a severe stroke that has affected the right half of his body. That is, unless the camera was, you know, flipped horizontally or something. But it looks like the right side of his body is not fully recovered yet. He suffered a severe stroke. He was in a stroke recovery center for a couple of months now, it seems. And he's been learning how to use his body again in order to recover from the stroke. And the good news is a lot of people can have rapid recovery from strokes with proper physical therapy, you know, good nutrition, good focus, and so on. And, you know, a stroke doesn't have to end your life, doesn't have to make you disabled for life. And so, you know, I pray for Jamie. And I hope that he achieves a full recovery. And frankly, for anybody who has suffered a stroke. It's just that I feel like he should have been more honest with his audience about what he was going through. And people would have understood. They wouldn't have blamed him for it. You can't blame someone for having a stroke. Well, but then there's the vaccine question, right? And the rumor is that he got vaccinated on a movie set, and then the stroke happened shortly after the vaccine. And he doesn't probably want to face the wrath of Hollywood, which would ban your entire career if you mention vaccines as having caused damage. So Jamie Foxx is in a very difficult spot. And I pray for him, and I pray for his recovery. So, all right. Now, one of the things that gives me great compassion for Jamie Foxx, or frankly anybody who has suffered a severe injury like that, is... Well, not only the fact that I genuinely care about people. I mean, I want to help end suffering on the planet. This is a lot of the reason why I do what I do. And I want to help people heal, and I want to help people avoid injury, i.e. avoid the jabs. And I want to help people be healthy. And I was recently tested in this in a very, very serious way. And I was almost turned into, you could say, although I would not use this term to describe anybody else, but someone might have used this to describe me if the outcome had been different. I was almost turned into a cripple. And fortunately, I now have almost full recovery. And I think, since, you know, I'm asking for Jamie Foxx to be transparent with his audience, I need to finish telling you this story and share with you what happened. But I was never hiding it, by the way. You saw me with a bandage around my finger in the studio, you know, a couple months ago. And I was rather severely injured with a severe laceration. And I almost lost my finger. And it's my index finger. So it's arguably the most important finger. So what I'm going to do here to tell you this story with full transparency, and also the miraculous healing that you won't believe when you see it, I'm going to show you the photo of the initial laceration. And this isn't even the most gruesome photo, but it is quite bloody. The blood is really healthy looking and fresh and very red, by the way. So it's healthy looking blood. You can kind of see the depth of the laceration, but if you're a doctor, pay attention to this, because you're going to immediately understand the anatomy of what got severed and so on. But I'm going to show you this picture, just warning you, if blood makes you queasy or whatever, you know, look away. But here it is. This is the hand injury that happened to me about 8 or 9 weeks ago. So this is the laceration. It lacerated underneath the, I don't know how you number the joints of the finger, but you can see it was a very deep laceration. There was quite a lot of blood. This is actually after a lot of the blood had stopped. So this is kind of after the worst bleeding. But there was a lot of blood. It was a very, very deep laceration. And it started underneath the finger and went all the way around, lacerated the side very deep, all the way up across the top to where I was afraid that the bone... first of all, I was afraid that I thought I had almost lost my finger. And when I realized I had not lost the finger, I began to check it out. My first fear was that I had I'd broken the bone. And I was going to have to go to the ER and have the bone set and so on. Fortunately, I checked it out and I had not broken the bone. I do believe that I fractured it quite severely. But I did not break it. And by the way, I'm not going to tell you exactly how this injury happened. It was a severe laceration. And it happened on my ranch. It wasn't at work or anything. It happened on my ranch. So the next thing I was concerned about was nerves, obviously. Because the nerves for the finger run through the sides of the finger. And, also I was concerned about ligaments. And the primary ligament that you use to flex that finger, to pull it, let's say like to pull a trigger, that ligament runs directly along the bottom of the finger where it goes into the center of the hand. And of course I was very concerned that ligament might have been lacerated. And if that were the case, I would have had to go in and had surgery. I was able to determine fairly quickly that I had not fully lacerated that ligament, but had probably partially lacerated it. I was also able to determine that I had lost some nerve function because part of the finger tip, the first section of the finger, had gone numb. And so my assessment was, okay, I had not broken the bone. I had not fully lacerated ligament. I was able to stop the bleeding. I'd done some nerve damage. And so I decided that there was nothing the ER could do for me. Now, I know this decision might be different with other people. A lot of people might have just gone to the ER, just, I don't know, out of habit. Like, doctor, what can I do? Take x-rays, whatever, do stitches. I decided that I did not want stitches, and I did not want to go to the ER unless I developed other symptoms over the next, 24 to 48 hours. Because I knew I'd stop the bleeding, and I knew that the ER couldn't do anything about the nerve damage. I also knew that blood vessels would regrow. So I knew I'd severed, obviously, the blood vessels that go along the side of the finger. And I also said to myself, if it turns out that I've lacerated the ligament, of course I would go in and have emergency surgery. All right. So I decided to engage in self-care for this severe injury. And the self-care consisted of using special bandages, special little micro bandages that would help, that would function as kind of semi-sutures to keep the skin together. Combined with, I use my own first aid silver gel multiple times a day for probably a month and a half. And by the way, that silver gel has 7 essential oils in it that are antimicrobial. And so through this entire thing, I never suffered any infection whatsoever. But in addition to using that silver gel, I also use hydrogen peroxide and various bandaging. I also use some iodine, some topical iodine. And so I want to show you this next picture, which is several weeks later. I don't know, 2 weeks later, whatever it is, maybe 3 weeks later. Yeah, I think this is 3. Let me show you this picture of what the healing process is starting to look like. Okay, so at this point, the wound is still obviously healing, and the ligaments, the side ligaments, which were completely severed, they are still healing. And at this point, I do not have restoration of mobility of the finger. So I could not shake anybody's hands. I couldn't button my shirt. I couldn't unzip my pants to take a leak. I mean, that finger was out of function. So I learned how to do everything without that finger. And that gave me a lot of perspective for people who do have stroke injuries or other physical handicaps, or perhaps are maybe missing a hand or an arm or a foot. And, it's a tough go. I couldn't open jars. I couldn't even flip a switch on the blender to make smoothies. And it was very difficult to scoop out avocados to make my smoothies and so on. But I didn't complain to you about it. I just knew that things are going to heal. And of course, this entire time I was using turmeric in my smoothies. I was using the first aid gel, like I said, and I was using lion's mane mushroom. Now, lion's mane mushroom, I think this is one of the keys to the healing journey here, which I'm going to show you more and you're going to be amazed. Lion's mane regrows nerves. Okay. I'm just going to say what it is. Lion's mane mushroom regrows nerves. Now, I'm not claiming that lion's mane mushroom can regrow like a severed spinal cord or anything like that. It's not going to regrow every nerve or major nerve bundles, perhaps, but for the small nerves in this finger, absolutely. With the body, God's divine power of healing that you're born with, the power of lion's mane mushroom and all the other nutrients, and I use tuning forks. So I use tuning forks every day, every evening, actually. I would, smack the tuning forks on my knee, and then I would hold the tuning fork on the two joints on both sides of this injury. So I was sending kinetic vibration into the finger. Now, it turns out that bones are great conductors of sound vibration. And tuning forks, the reason why you want to use tuning forks is because being that they're made of steel, physical metal, when you hammer a tuning fork, it vibrates, and it usually has a specific hertz that it's claiming to vibrate at, 433 or whatever. But actually, tuning forks vibrate at multiple higher harmonics. All of them do. You can see it on an oscilloscope. And tuning forks also vibrate at ultrasonic frequencies as well. So what I was doing with these tuning forks was actually, I was pushing ultrasonic sound vibration, even beyond sound, ultrasonic energy into the joints. And then I also purchased a 908 nanometer laser device. And these are non-visible waveforms of light. And because from being the editor of naturalnews.com and the stories we've covered, I know, I've covered these stories, that ultrasonic sound actually awakens zombie cells or senescent cells in the body. We've covered this in previous stories. And so I knew that the way to keep the cells alive in my finger, even though the blood supply had been severed, even though the nerves had been severed, I knew the way to keep it alive was to use ultrasonic frequencies and to use healing light and to use nutrition and topical essential oils and lion's mane mushroom. Okay, so I was healing this from every possible angle. Now, after, let me add this. I did, at one point, I went to visit an orthopedic doctor just to have another professional opinion on the healing process. And it was about 5 weeks in. I went to see this orthopedic doctor, and I showed him the initial picture of the injury. And, you know, side by side with, like, here's my finger, and here's the injury, which I think was 5 weeks earlier. And he looked at the picture, and he looked at my finger, and he looked back at the picture, and back at my finger, and he said, that was only 5 weeks ago? Are you sure? I'm like, yeah, that was 5 weeks ago. And he said, I mean, are your nerves working? I'm like, yeah, so I'm moving it around. And he's like, squeeze my finger. And so I squeeze his finger with my finger. And he's like, and he's testing my finger, you know, like going to the side and up and down. He's like, yeah, resist me, you know, this, all this stuff. And he's feeling it and moving it around. He's like, man, like, first, number one, you know, normally it would take a lot longer than 5 weeks to heal this much, he said. But he said also, you know, most people wouldn't have full recovery of nerve function from that kind of nerve damage. And he said, it looks like you at least partially severed your primary ligament. And he was surprised that I had strength there. And I said, well, yeah, I know, but I'm, you know, I'm a nutritionist and I'm, you know, doctors don't like to hear that. Ah, nutrition. I'm like, no, serious, man. I take care of my nutrition, and also I didn't tell him about the tuning forks because that would have just generated an eye roll. Tuning forks, oh my God. So, you know, because, you know, come on, they don't teach that in medical school, do they? No? So, anyway, he said, look, you're on track. Just keep doing what you're doing. Just keep working the mobility and this and that. And like, somehow you're healing incredibly fast. So, you know, good luck. Okay, cool. So that was done. You know, doctor didn't say anything was crazy wrong, which was great. And so I continued with the healing protocol, which I already described to you. Of course, doing all the nutrition. And I forgot to mention, vitamin C is key for ligament healing, by the way. Forgot to mention that. Oh, and one other thing the doctor told me, he said normally ligament healing takes 120 to 180 days. So it's supposed to be 4 to 6 months before the ligaments repair, okay? And I was like, really? So I even went on YouTube and I looked it up. I was like, hand ligament repair. You know, how long does it take? And sure enough, all the videos, like 4 to 6 months. I'm like, man, that sounds like a long time to not use your finger. So anyway, I continued with my nutrition and healing and everything and, you know, mobility and rehab. I looked up some rehab exercises. There's a gal on YouTube, I think it's called like Virtual Hand Care, and she has all these little rehab tricks and things that you can do, like, you know, do the claw. You know, like make your hand into the shape of a claw. And she has good advice, like, you know, pick up small objects, you know, like pennies and things. It sounds funny, I know. But when you're physically handicapped, as I was, you know, I'm going to do the research and I'm going to do the rehab and I'm going to do the work, right? So I'm looking for experts who know what to do. And she's talking about buddy straps. I'm like, what's a buddy strap? You strap one finger to your other finger. And then you go throughout your day and then you force your lame finger to do what your other finger's doing, you know? So I learned about buddy straps and I got some buddy straps. And then I got all these like rehab balls that you squeeze, which are different resistance levels, right? So I'm squeezing these rehab balls and everything. And here's the funny part. I was doing all this while I was interviewing other people. So almost every video that you've seen of me in the studio for the last 2 months, I'm actually rehabbing my hand underneath the camera. Seriously. Like just below the camera. You can't see it. I'm doing all hand rehab stuff. I know. Got to use the time wisely, right? All right. So now I'm going to show you the photo that I just took before I recorded this. Okay? So here's the result after, 8 or 9 weeks of from a severe laceration where I almost lost my finger and suffered a very severe nerve laceration, blood vessel laceration, and partial primary ligament laceration and complete laceration of the side ligaments. All right, so here's the photo. All right, so here's my finger today. Virtually, there's almost, you can't even barely see the scar. And frankly, at this point, if I didn't mention it to you, nobody would ever know. I'm able to, you know, do everything, shoot rifles and shoot pistols and pick up small objects and, you know, scoop out avocados and button my shirt, unzip my fly, you know, all the things that I used to do. I still have a little bit more mobility yet to go. It's not 100% yet, but I have confidence it's on track. But I want you to look at this and realize that the doctor told me, again, a lot of people could have lost function and lost nerve function in particular. And what I found out, which is rather shocking, is that on the tip of my finger now, where I was partially numb before, I now have hypersensitivity to textures. In other words, I can read Braille. I mean, I can feel all the Braille dots now. It is so bizarre. I have extra sensitivity, and I believe it's because the nerves grew back as new nerves. That's, now, I don't know, some of you doctors out there, you might think, no, that can't possibly be. Well, hey, look, I'm just telling you what I experienced, okay? It was numb. I healed it. I did all the sound vibration. I did the laser lights. I did the lion's mane. The nerves regrew. Now, I not only have 100% nerve function, I have like 150% nerve function, okay? Which is weird. It is quite weird. Because like, if I feel the side of my face with whiskers on it, if I haven't shaved it, it's like, it's really, really rough. It feels like I'm, I don't know, it feels really pronounced is what I'm saying. But again, I know that I could read Braille at this point if I had any Braille around, which is, it's a interesting connection to people who have a different disability, people who are sightless, right? So I was almost, you know, almost lost a finger. Other people, their eyes don't function. We all have to do the best we can with what we have, right? And I feel a great sense of compassion. But I gotta say, this healing journey that I just described to you, it's very humbling to me. It's one of the reasons I share this with you, is because this underscored to me the fact that everything that we teach here at naturalnews.com and brighteon.com, everything that I share with you about nutrition and sound healing and vibrational medicine and you know, light medicine and everything, people, it freaking works. Medicinal mushrooms, turmeric, essential oils, colloidal silver. Folks, I'm telling you, you look at this picture. If I had gone to the emergency room And if I had followed the advice of mainstream doctors, it would not look this good. It would not heal this fast. There's no way I would not have resumed function to the extent that I do now. The reason that this scar is almost imperceptible, and the reason I have very high restoration of mobility, not 100%, but very high, is because natural medicine works. And by the way, I'm going to show you some of the rehab that I've done as well to kind of show you the fact that I'm able to do exercises and mobility with it now. So I bought these little hand exercisers that are, they're rehab devices. Now, let me show you the picture here. So here I am squeezing one of the rehab devices here. And it's got resistance, obviously. I mean, this is how it works. And so you can see that I'm able to use this finger, and you can see the scar. You can see there's some skin deformation there. You know, it's never going to look totally normal again, but no one will notice it, you know, unless they see this video. It doesn't matter. But you can see I'm using it. I'm using the finger. It's functional. I have, again, 150% restoration of the nerves. I have full blood flow. You know, my fingertips are pink. If you press on them hard, you know, and you turn it white and then you let go, the pink comes right back. You know, the blood is flowing. It's healthy. I have full functionality, or near full mobility, I should say. And I have enough strength rehab to be able to use it. And it's just going to keep getting stronger. Again, I'm taking vitamin C. I took a lot of zinc, obviously. You know, I'm doing turmeric, and I'm doing, you know, all the nutritional things that I talk about, plus lion's mane, a lot of lion's mane. So this works, folks. And don't forget the tuning forks, and don't forget the light healing devices. There's also ones that, by the way, there's LEDs. There's LED devices that are, they're promoted as infrared devices on Amazon that are pretty affordable, like $100+ that are really, really good, that help warm up your joints and muscles. In fact, let me just give a shout out to this particular device that I use. It's called Shine Red Light Therapy, and it's currently $159 on Amazon. So Shine, S-H-I-N-E, and it has infrared 850 nanometer light therapy, and also 660 nanometer dual wavelength. I do have another device that's got 908 nanometer, but that's an actual laser. But in terms of a really affordable unit, this unit, Shine Red Light Therapy, is a bargain, and it's really good at warming up your joints and also activating your cells. So the bottom line on all this, folks, is that nutrition works, natural medicine works, tuning forks work, you know, essential oils work. I mean, again, and you don't see any stitches on the side of my scar, right? You don't see any stitches, no tracks. Like normally if you go in and get stitches, you know, you're going to have all these ugly tracks on the side of it. Looks like Frankenstein. But because I did not go to the ER and I decided to heal it myself, don't have any stitches. I mean, here, look again, right? You don't see any, there's no stitches. There's no tracks on the side of the skin. And I'm not saying that you shouldn't go to the ER if you have a severe injury. I'm not saying that at all. You probably should, especially if you don't have the medical knowledge that I have at the moment, because I could self-assess a lot of things. You know, I've done a lot of first aid courses and live fire, you know, battlefield medic courses and blood stop courses and things like that. So I do have some level of training to be able to assess. And if you don't have that training, you know, obviously go in and get emergency care as you need it. But I'm just saying, because I chose to do what I do as the health ranger, my individual decision, my personal choice is to use nutrition, light, kinetic energy, tuning forks, essential oils. You know, I did not have infections. I did not lose the function. I did not end up numb. And as a result, I'm probably going to get about a 90% to 95% strength recovery is, I think, where this is going. It may never be 100%, but that's okay. I can live with that. So I share this with you because, you know, number one, like I said about Jamie Foxx, I think that influencers should be transparent with their audience, with their listeners and readers and fans. When you're going through difficult times, you know, share that with your audience and they will support you in that journey. And then secondly, that I chose natural medicine and natural medicine worked. And this is proof. This is living proof. And I want you to feel inspired. If you have suffered an injury, if you are dealing with a medical condition of any kind, I want you to know that nutrition can be a really pivotal part of your healing journey as well. You know, and I'm not saying you shouldn't go to the emergency room if you have some severe, you know, acute situation, like, oh, you just cut yourself open with a chainsaw. Yeah, you should go in and probably get a lot of stitches for that. But what I am saying is that no matter what your healing journey, no matter what you're dealing with, that you may want to expand the list of options of things that you could bring into it. Have you thought about light? Have you thought about tuning forks? Have you thought about vibrational medicine? Have you thought about therapeutic massage? Have you thought about, you know, topical, like MSM with a little bit of DMSO? Because I've done that too on this finger. Have you thought about enhancing your nutrition? Have you thought about taking more vitamin C? You know, because vitamin C, if you look up the number one nutrient for ligament healing, it's vitamin C, folks. It's so simple. It's not some exotic thing. It's just vitamin C. So I'm slamming vitamin C, you know, more than usual. Because, you know, if you're nutrient deficient, it's going to be hard for your body to heal. Oh, yeah. And also, I should mention, some people prayed for my healing. And so we got to give glory to God on this, too. God gave us the blueprint for perfect health. God gave us a body that knows how to heal itself. And when we ask God to intervene and help us heal, he answers. And he did answer. And I know that, you know, I've talked about all these other things and tuning forks and this and that. But the overarching healing force in the universe is God. And without Jesus in my life, I don't think this would have been possible, frankly. So it's all these things. And I thank you for your support, I feel grateful that I have this finger. It would be very difficult without it. I couldn't type for many weeks, you know, like I said, and I couldn't shake hands, I couldn't do anything. I even had trouble operating equipment on the ranch and doing all the things I do, you know, feeding the animals and carrying buckets and bags of grain and... Oh, by the way, opening cans of dog food is much more difficult than you think if you have a severe laceration of your finger. Yeah. Opening dog food cans becomes a whole different challenge for a while. Anyway, I can do it now, but for a while, no, it was not easy. So to all of you who have a physical limitation, you have a disability, you have an injury, or if you recently suffered an injury, I want to give you that inspiration. You can heal. You can heal. Bring in every modality that you can think of. Read natural news. Listen to my podcast. Find other channels, maybe on Brighteon.com, that talk about healing. There are solutions for minor nerve damage. There are ways to get your body to regrow blood supply, obviously. Your body can regrow skin, partial ligament tears, maybe not full, you know, not a full laceration of the ligament. If you completely cut it, you know, you're going to have microsurgery to join it back together. But if you haven't completely cut it, your body can heal. And there, I just want you to understand this is real. These healing modalities work. I know I've said that about three times. I'm sorry. It's just, I'm trying to drive this home because I just lived through this myself. And I always knew that I would heal. I never thought, oh, I'm going to be a cripple for life. Or at least I don't know, maybe in a couple of down moments I had that fear. But overall, I felt like, yeah, this is, I'm going to be able to heal. The body can heal. The miracle of healing is built in. I just have to give it time. And it turns out I only had to give it like half the time of what is normal. So, you know, I'm only a little over 2 months into this healing. And again, if you're a doctor looking at this, you're like, there's no way that's true. Okay. Believe whatever you want. I'm telling you, it's true. I have the log files of when I took the photos. So in 6 months, you know, I'm going to be 99% or whatever, or close to it. So this is real. Nutrition works. Alternative medicine works. And finally, I do feel disappointed that I will never be a hand model because of this scar. So, shucks. George Costanza. If you know that Seinfeld episode, he was going to be a hand model until something happened. And then it was done. So, I will no longer be a hand model. That's one less thing that I can do in my life. But there are a billion other things that I can do. And if we all have that attitude, we can overcome injury, sickness, disease, loss, whatever. We can overcome it. We can move forward. We can heal. And we are miraculous beings. So just tap into that full spectrum of healing potential that is beyond mechanical. It's even beyond nutritional. It's also energetic. It's also spiritual. It is mind-body medicine as well. It's belief. I mean, do you think I would have healed this fast if I didn't believe it was possible? If I had said every day, like, oh my God, it's never going to heal. Like, do you think that in 8 or 9 weeks it would be like this? No way, not a chance. Mind-body medicine combined with everything else, all those modalities and the power of God and Christ in our lives. Folks, this is a living little miracle right here. Thank you for taking the patience to listen to my story. And in the meantime, I will try not to cut off any other fingers, because they're all useful, it turns out. Okay, thank you for listening. God bless you all. Take care. When I was young, I used to play Dungeons and Dragons quite a bit. And I know that some of you will think, whoa, that's pretty wild. That's a demonic game. Well, actually, we were fighting demons in the game. So myself and the other members of our parties in this game, we were always the good characters. You know, we were the lawful, law-abiding healers, and we were fighting evil and fighting demons. So it's kind of an interesting metaphor for real life right now. But in order to fight demons, you have to face off against them. So yeah, there were demons in the game, and we were trying to kill them. And we succeeded. But nevertheless, this podcast is about spellcasting and sorcery, which is a very real thing in the real world today. And it's also about resistance to spells. And that's why I bring up Dungeons and Dragons, because as I recall, in the game, one of the first spells that a mage gets, that's a magician, is a sleep spell. So you can cast a spell and cause your enemy opponents to go to sleep. Now, this is obviously a spell that's being used right now across culture and media, along with other spells. There are illusion spells, which we'll talk about here in a second. But the sleep spell is designed to just get people, just go to sleep, don't worry about it. Don't worry, it's a rumor. You know, there are no children being sex trafficked. It's all a rumor. We've already fact-checked it. You know, that's a sleep spell. Like, everybody go back to sleep. Don't worry that your dollars are worth less and less every day. Don't worry that the election was rigged. Don't worry that your so-called president is a criminal who accepts bribes from foreign nationals. You know, just go back to sleep. And as part of that going back to sleep, of course, there are lots of distractions that are presented in society that can, in some people, sort of lull them to sleep. You know, celebrity news, and in some cases, sports can have that function, or pop culture. People end up talking about, oh, what's the latest movie? What's the latest fashion? Yeah, you're just going to sleep, basically.
You're sleeping through life. Now, also in Dungeons & Dragons, there were different races that you could play. You could be a human. You could be an elf. You could be a dwarf. You could be... I don't know what all the races were, but... Seems like those... Oh, you could be a halfling, I think. Whatever that is. Half something. And I seem to recall that elves had resistance to magic for whatever reason. Like, elves were just, you know, magic-proof creatures for... I don't know why. But that's actually relevant to what we see today, because there are certain people, like myself and you, who are also resistant to magic. For example, the sleep spell isn't working on us, right? We are awakening. And we are waking up others. So the, you know, sleepy time and nope, no thanks. You know, we're not going to lose our country. We're wide awake right now. But there's a more powerful spell that is cast by, as I recall, a character class called an illusionist. So illusionists could cast illusions that could be audible, like, oh, there's a sound over there, or there's a voice in your head. Or they could be visual. Like an illusionist could create the visual appearance of anything. An object, a horse, a person, a building, whatever. And obviously this could be quite useful in Dungeons & Dragons, because if you can, you know, convince your opponent that, let's say, that giant hole in the ground isn't there because you've cast an illusion of... you know, dirt on top of it, then they might fall in the hole, you know, you've taken care of that orc right there. Let's say, fall into a bungee pit and it's done. But casting illusions is what the media does. And there are, of course, globalist-run illusion narratives that are very powerful, one of them being climate change. It's a total illusion, right? Completely made up, not backed by any actual science. But they create this illusion and then they make it powerful through peer pressure. And they try to convince people that the earth is warming and the oceans are rising rapidly and that CO2 is a poison and all these horrible, you know, horrible things. And that if we don't give up all fossil fuels, we're all going to die. It's just, wow. Oh, and agriculture is bad for the planet. That's the newest one. And nitrogen is bad and all the elements are bad. This is a spell. It's a spell cast by sorcerers. Sorcerers, some of them named Soros, by the way, which is not that far from sorcerers. You see what I mean? So, they're casting spells. Vaccines, another spell. Not rooted in science, rooted in sorcery. As you know, the history of the word, pharmakia means sorcery. And it's also the root word for the industry, big pharma, or pharmaceuticals. So, pharmakia is sorcery. And by the way, a lot of the drugs are mind-altering drugs that are themselves a form of chemical sorcery. So we're talking about antidepressants, psychiatric drugs, all these things, and some of them make people suicidal. Some of them make people think they're playing a video game, and they go shoot up a school, like we've seen in various school shootings. But they all dissociate you from reality, the psychiatric drugs, and they are a form of sorcery. I won't quite call it witchcraft, because it's not that. It is science sorcery. It's using the label of science to carry out sorcery, which involves the projection of evil with false visions and false voices and false narratives to infest and infect the minds of the people in order to achieve a specific outcome, which in this case is the extermination of the human race. So this is just like in Dungeons & Dragons when a powerful mage casts, a giant fireball spell, and it just like rushes down the cave and just burns up all the orcs, let's say. But in this case, the sorcerers of the world have launched a massive illusion spell that is designed to get people to kill themselves by destroying agriculture and taking death jabs. You ever thought about it that way? The people who line up and take those jabs, they are under the influence of a spell. The people who say that growing food is bad for the planet, they are under the influence of a spell. The people who say carbon dioxide is a poison or a pollutant, they're under the influence of a spell. And of course, there are many other spells and many other narratives. Vaccines are one of them. You know, climate change is another. Here's one. It's a spell that convinces people that dollars are money. They're not. Dollars are currency. They don't fit the definition of money. Money is something that has to hold value by definition and is fully fungible and so on. But dollars are not. Dollars don't hold value. So they're not money. They're not even backed by gold anymore since 1971. So the entire financial system, based on fiat currency, money printing, and debt, is also another kind of sorcery. You could call it financial sorcery, perhaps, in that case. But it's a spell, and people become spellbound, and they spend their entire lives working to earn something that isn't even real, which is dollars. And they have no idea that those dollars are being stolen from them constantly, every single day, in ways that they don't even anticipate. For example, a friend of mine, his parents just sold their house. And they've had this house for like, I don't know, 40 years or something. And they bought it, let's say, I don't know the exact numbers, but I think they bought it for, let's say, $200,000. And then they sold it for $1 million. Now, you might think, wow, they gained a lot of money. Except they didn't. Because that's a 5x return over 40 years. Well, what has the purchasing power of the dollar experienced over 40 years? Has it lost, you know, let's say 80% of its value? Yeah, probably so. Or close to that. So the so-called gain in the house price is already offset or consumed by the loss in the purchasing power of the dollar. And then the IRS comes along and says, oh, you got to pay tax on that gain because you gained. You got to pay, you know, capital gains tax, I think, is what it's called for real estate, right? So you got to pay capital gains tax, but you didn't really gain, you see. So it's all a scam. But the IRS comes along and says, well, you got to pay, you know, 20% of this gain. So if your gain was $800,000, then what? They say you got to pay the IRS another $160,000, right? So now you have lost money in real terms. You've lost purchasing power. Even though you sat on the house for 40 years, and even though the sorcerer media told you that, oh, you're gaining value. The price is going up. Look, you're going to have $1 million one day. Even though all that is true, the $1 million minus the IRS take of another $160,000 or so, what you're left with doesn't buy what $200,000 used to buy when you bought the house. So no, you didn't gain. Over 40 years, you lost. And that happens every day all over America right now. This defines the system. But again, it's all a bunch of spell casting. People think they're earning money, but they're actually suffering under a spell. Same thing with food, by the way. So a lot of processed food is really a type of spell casting. And they even use artificial colors and flavors to make the spell very convincing. In the food industry, the spell is trying to convince you that, oh, this is real food. Even though it's nutrient depleted, mineral deficient, partially hydrogenated, genetically engineered, and it's probably loaded with the monosodium glutamate, you know, excitotoxin flavor enhancers, and artificial colors to make it look more like food. That's why they use the colors, right? FDNC, red number 5, yellow number 2, blue lake number 40, or whatever. It's all about casting a spell. So you're walking throughout the store and you see things that look bright. Well, your neurology says, well, that's fresh. You know, a bright red apple peel, that indicates that it's got nutrients. So Coca-Cola has their cans bright red like an apple, and it's sweet like an apple. And it tells your mind that, oh, this is food, when, of course, it's actually a poison. But see, Coca-Cola is in the business of spellcasting, PepsiCo, all the processed food companies, and they run commercials to cast more spells through the media that don't even really promote their food as much as just create the impression that you'll be socially popular if you consume their products. The beer companies used to do this until, of course, Bud Light came along and decided to just try to turn all their beer drinkers into gay people or something, or trans, but and that was a travesty, a total marketing catastrophe. But for the most part, the corporate brands are casting spells. And so as you go throughout the day and you're hearing advertising by the big corporate giants and mainstream media, you're hearing the news stories, you're seeing events take place, you know, you're looking at food prices at the grocery store. All of this that's going on all around you consists almost entirely of sorcerers' spells. You are being subjected to spell casting to try to convince you to take actions and make decisions that contradict your own self-interest. They can only do that through spells. So they can't actually tell the truth about vaccines and get people to line up and take them. They can't say, oh, we're trying to depopulate the planet and we're wondering if some of you would like to just commit vaccine-assisted suicide and be part of our depopulation agenda. Please line up and take these jabs. If they said that, because that's all true, very few people would line up. I know a few would, because there are some hyper-gullible morons out there who would line up and commit suicide if they think it might save the planet. And to those people, I say, good riddance. We actually should have a jab for you. It's sad that we don't. Nevertheless, for everybody else, they're not quite as gullible, but they're still relatively easy for the globalists to brainwash. So the globalists run out of plandemic and scare everybody. Oh my gosh, everybody's going to die unless you get the jab. And the jab is medicine. It's medicine. And don't look over here where there's no long-term clinical trials. Don't look over there where there's no safety testing, no efficacy proof, no data to support it. In fact, it keeps killing people. Don't look at those things. Just absorb the spell. Roll up your sleeve and take the jab and die, human. Die, right? Like, that's the globalist point of view. And that has managed to get, I don't know, half of society, maybe a little bit more, because people are really incredibly gullible and subjected to spellcasting. So if you think about it, what we are trying to do, what I do every day, is I break the spell. I mean, quite literally. I help millions of people break the spell. I am the spell breaker. It's like being a code breaker. I'm like a spell hacker. I can decode and hack and break the spell using words, by the way. And words are used by the sorcerers to cast the spells. You know, they exploit words. They abuse them. They twist them. You know, the phrase gender-affirming care. That means they're slicing the nutsack off a little boy, but they call it gender-affirming care. See, they lie with words, but we tell the truth with words, and we awaken people with words, so we use words to break the spells. But it takes a high level of mastery in the use of words to be able to break the spells. And that's why people like myself, I've spent, you know, 25 years mastering the art of verbal and written communication, and that's why my words are so effective that I've been banned and deplatformed everywhere across the planet on every platform that you can possibly think of, because they don't want the spell breakers like myself or the spell hackers to be able to break the spells. So a little bit of homework for you on this. I'd like you to observe the spells as you go throughout your day. I want you to look at every attempt that the media or the government or corporations, every attempt they're making to affect your mind with a spell. Doesn't always have to be advertising or marketing. It could be news or narratives or policies or all kinds of things. Or, you know, it could be geoengineering. It could be false flag operations. Those are also a type of spell. But I'd like you to observe all the spells that are being cast upon you in a given day. And if you can't identify 50 spells, you're not paying attention. There are at least 50 spells cast upon you every single day. Sometimes in just a few minutes on TV, by the way. But make it a point. Just do this for one day. I mean, start with one day. I want you to go through and identify every spell that's being cast upon you by the establishment. Every message. And it could be spells cast upon you by your family and friends because they are spellbound by the same spells. So they might say to you, oh, you need to wear a mask, otherwise my mask won't work. That's a spell. That's a sorcerer's spell that bypasses logic and reason, obviously. And if you want to be more immune to spells, then just keep listening to my podcasts and watch my videos and watch my channel. I am the spell breaker. Maybe that should be my new nickname. go from the Health Ranger to the Spellbreaker. Breaking the spells. That's what we have to do, folks. Because we can't allow our minds, our hearts, our consciousness, our lives to be dominated by evil sorcerers. Or the Eye of Sauron from Lord of the Rings. Or, I don't know, what were the dark wizards named in all of that? I don't remember all their names. Saruman. Yeah, I think that was one. Saruman was a dark wizard. And Gandalf was, you know, Gandalf the White, which I'm sure now would be considered racist. Gandalf the White is a great, loving wizard. Of course they made him white. You know, that's what you would hear. But if you want to know how to break spells, you want to break spells and actually control your mind, control your life, keep listening to my podcast. I'm Mike Adams, the Health Ranger. Read my articles on naturalnews.com, and you can catch more of my podcasts and my interviews and videos at brighteon.com. Thank you for listening. Take care.